You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire.
Russian hackers go after New York Times reporters and the FBI investigates. Exploits in the Shadow Broker's teaser are being test-driven in the wild. Op-eds call for a mole hunt at Fort Meade. A familiar banking Trojan moves from Poland to Germany. British universities are targeted by ransomware. Researchers give victims of wildfire ransomware some relief in the form of a decryptor. Gaming sites come under attack. There's a new push to restrict encryption in the EU. And Texas brings us a fourth-grade steely-eyed missile man. I'm Dave Bittner in Baltimore with your CyberWire summary for Wednesday, August 24th, 2016. Add the New York Times to the list of enterprises known to have been targeted by Russian government hackers. The paper acknowledged the attempts yesterday, they occurred earlier this month, but said there was as yet no evidence that the attacks against its internal networks had been successful. Reporters were targeted directly, ostensibly through their email accounts, which, since the Times outsources email services to Google, wouldn't count as internal. The Times' Moscow bureau was most directly affected. Reports suggest other news agencies may also have received the attentions of Russian intelligence services, but so far no one seems able to say who those other news organizations are. The FBI is investigating. More developments in the Shadow Brokers incident. Both Cisco and FireEye say they've seen signs that some of the exploits leaked, especially Extra Bacon, which exploits a Cisco firewall zero-day, are being test-driven in the wild. A number of attempts have hit the honeypot Cisco established to help keep an eye on things. Apparently, it doesn't take a great deal of skill to use the exploits. The chief of FireEye's EyeSight intelligence team assessed the degree of difficulty as low. Exploitation should be accessible to just about anyone with a college computer science degree, as he put it on FedScoop. The chief of Cisco's product security incident response team told FedScoop, quote, "As you can imagine, we have all hands on deck for this," end quote. And yes, we can all well imagine that. Good luck to Cisco, Fortinet, and Juniper Networks. We might also say good luck to Huawei. Comey, which has been poring over the Shadow Broker's teasers on behalf of Motherboard, says it's found stuff suggesting that Huawei products were also targeted by the authors of the exploits the Shadow Brokers got their hands on. As far as we've been able to determine, no one's come within an order of magnitude of the Shadow Broker's half-billion-dollar-plus asking price for the stolen files. The bidding was stalled yesterday, a little north of 1,000, and there are no obvious signs of movement yet. Understand, though, that we keep such auction sites at arm's length. They amount to a bad virtual neighborhood. There's much further speculation about how shadow brokers got the files. A few people, notably James Bamford, are arguing that there's a second Snowden responsible for the leaks. In favor of this, they cite material in the teasers they believe could only have been accessible from inside a U.S. government secure facility. More shakily, they think it unlikely that a hostile government, say Russia, just for the sake of argument, would have revealed its intelligence success. This second bit of reasoning is considerably less convincing, if only because it overlooks the obvious information operational dimension of international conflict. Snowden himself has said for some time he thinks there's another person inside NSA stealing sensitive data, and The Observer runs an op-ed by John Schindler, who argues that there probably is a mole at Fort Meade. He reviews some history of counterintelligence failures going back some 70 years and finishes with a cri de coeur calling for better internal security. He also describes Snowden as a patsy, presumably of some other better-placed penetration agent. In any case, whoever the shadow brokers are, they're clearly no Edward Snowden. There's not much of the whistleblower about their revelations, and the Hollywood dialect of their communiques is too over-the-top for credibility. Boris, Natasha, and Fearless Leader were all more convincing. Turning, we admit with a sigh of relief, to more conventional cybercrime, we hear that the Gaznim banking Trojan is moving west. Recently active in Poland, it's now turning up in German banking networks. Cryptex continues to be widely traded in the black market and used in the wild. There is some good news on ransomware to balance all this, however. Wildfire, a strain that's been particularly active in the Netherlands, can now be defeated without payment. Intel Security and Kaspersky Labs have released a decryptor, so bravo Kaspersky and Intel Security. Gaming sites have come under attack this week. First, the Epic Games Forum was compromised with about 800,000 users' credentials exposed. At midweek, we learn that Blizzard Entertainment and Grand Theft Auto have also come under attack. Cybersecurity Ventures estimates that cybercrime damages will exact a global cost of some $6 trillion by 2021. Plixer's Mike Patterson told the CyberWire that he agrees the problem is growing. Quote, "I have no doubt that the cost of cybercrime is going to rise dramatically. Malware has proven that it often cannot be detected until the crime is underway or until after it's been completed. Consumers, manufacturers, and financial institutions are not ready to accept that some services should not be tied to the Internet." End quote. He sees the problem as fundamentally being one of risk estimation and management. People and businesses are too willing to purchase convenience with a significantly increased risk. In patching news, VMware Identity Manager and vRealize Automation have received updates that VMware says address multiple security issues. Looking at the policy world, the crypto wars are heating up in Europe. France and Germany, feeling pressure from increased terrorist activity, are both pushing for more European Union restrictions on encryption. Finally, a fourth grader in Pflugerville, Texas, has demonstrated what all of us admit in our heart of hearts. None of us actually really read the terms and conditions. According to KXAN, young master Evan Robertson, who the news station describes as kind of a big deal, set up a Wi-Fi hotspot in a mall, wrote not-so-lengthy terms and conditions for its use. They included, quote, "If you are still reading this, you should definitely not connect to this network," end quote, as the fourth from the last sentence, and then waited to see what would happen. 76 people connected, fully 40 of whom accepted the terms and conditions, even though, as Evan put it, quote, "We made it so no one in the universe would agree to it," end quote. Kind of a big deal, KXAN says. Well, the CyberWire says, you, Master Robertson, are one steely-eyed missile man.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its zero trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zerotrustai. The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business.
And joining me once again is Malek Ben-Salem. She's the R&D manager at Accenture Technology Labs. Malek, we talk a lot about cloud computing, but there's another term that's floating around, and that's fog computing. Tell us, what do we need to know about fog computing?
Fog computing, in a nutshell, is a system-level architecture that extends compute, network, and storage capabilities of the cloud to the edge of the IoT network. And it can be exclusively located at the edge of the network, or it can be a combination between those capabilities at the edge as well as extended all the way to the cloud. One of the key characteristics of fog computing is that it lowers the latency of transactions. So, and that's the reason behind moving this intelligence and this compute and networking capability closer to the edge so that you can offer services with very low latency. Also, a great advantage of the fog computing model is that the jitter is very low as opposed to the jitter within the cloud computing model. And jitter is basically a variation in delay of the received packets. So the quality of the service is much better in fog computing. Now, because all of these services are closer to the edge, the data does not have to travel a long distance to the cloud and back. So the exposure of that data is limited, and therefore there is greater privacy if it's protected correctly and the attack surface is smaller. So there are some security benefits.
Are there any downsides to it?
The downsides is that, so let me give an example of one application of fog computing. Let's think about smart cities, right? And managing traffic within smart cities. You can think of the connected vehicles and the traffic signs, signals, as well as traffic light signals, as building a fog of their own where they can communicate together to manage traffic, to manage the flow of the traffic. And that's a local application, but you can also have a cloud level application where you look at that traffic over a longer period of time over the entire city to make policy recommendations about how to route traffic or where to build new roads. The downside is that you may have to make assumptions about the status of the underlying network, and particularly the status of the network connections between those devices at the edge, because it's highly mobile, because these devices are highly mobile, and because in many cases it relies on wireless networking. The connectivity is not always available.
I see. And is this something that people are, that's actually being put into use now, or are there fog networks in use, or is this something that we expect to see growing in the future?
This is something that we expect to see in the future mostly. Yeah.
All right.
There are consortiums being created around this concept to define the fog architecture. That is open, but it's a model that we'll see more of in the future. And one major benefit of this is that it will push a lot of the network traffic to the edge, so the major backhaul networks will see some relief.
Ah, interesting. All right, Malek Ben-Salem, thanks for joining us.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire Daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And that's the CyberWire. We are proudly produced in Maryland by our talented team of editors and producers. I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. And now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and zero trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.